This is Digital Story Podcast number 991, March 18th, 2025. Today's theme is Mobile Photography for Big Kids. I'm Derek Story. As iPads and the software for them continue to evolve, we're in an enviable spot that allows us to travel lighter than ever, yet still fully enjoy our photography. This week, I'll provide you with the current state of my mobile photography workflow and why I've selected those particular tools. All of this and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. The bulk of what I'll be talking about today will be iOS and working on an iPad, plugging things into that USB-C port, such as your card reader, and the software that we use to organize and manipulate our photos. But before I get to that, we must note that laptops are also becoming lighter and more powerful at the same time. Now, we've always had light laptops, but I don't think we've seen laptops like we're looking at right now in terms of power, battery life, and a very high nimbelosity rating. And of course, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I'm testing the new MacBook Air M4 right now, the 13-inch model. I've had it all day today, so I've had a first full day with it. And I thought I'd give you an update on my initial impressions. So first of all, it was very easy to set up because I have an iCloud account. So I keep my documents and my desktop in iCloud and share it across my devices. And you can set that up in Finder Preferences if you're not using that already. I highly recommend it. Now, in the early days when that first was available, you could feel that it slowed things down a bit, but that really isn't the case anymore. I don't feel any performance hit at all. And the nice thing about it is that when you log into a new machine, such as setting up the new MacBook Air here, everything just appears on the new machine. It's really cool. It saves a lot of worry, saves a lot of time, saves a lot of hassle. So the setup for me was very quick. Now, I don't load everything in off my previous laptop because I'm always testing things. I'm experimenting. I think you are too, even though you're not writing articles about it necessarily, but you're trying new stuff. And some of that new stuff sticks and some of it doesn't. And it's really an opportunity for me to leave behind the stuff that doesn't and just add on the tools that I'm using right now. And I love that feeling. It feels so good to be lean and mean and clean on a new laptop. The laptop that I sent off, the M1 MacBook Pro, that had a lot of stuff on it, and I still had plenty of room on the 1 terabyte hard drive, which makes me feel good. Now, I got a 1 terabyte SSD for the MacBook Air as well, so I shouldn't have any problems with storage. But it was interesting going through the process of uncoupling the older laptop because I'm trading it in. It went off via FedEx today to the trade-in spot, and hopefully I'll be getting an email here, oh, probably by the end of the week, that says, "We love your trade-in. Here is your $810 credited toward your new laptop." That's what I want to see. That's what I anticipate I will see. But it was interesting cleaning it off, shutting it down, and just looking at all the stuff that had accumulated over almost 4 years of owning it. It's amazing how much stuff that we add, and especially those of us that like adventure in software computing, right? Try new things, see how they work, and go from there. As I'm sitting here with the new one actually right in front of me, because this is where I keep my show notes and, you know, all the articles that I link to and all my other work, right? Everything is on here. I will say that, first of all, even though the screen is only 500 nits as opposed to 1,000 on my MacBook Pro, inside, which is where I've been all day, you don't notice any difference. In fact, I'm set at half brightness right now as I work. So I'm not really anticipating any sort of difference with the screen. That was one of the things I was curious about, how the MacBook Air screen would compare to the MacBook Pro screen, which is brighter. Inside, there's no difference at all. I haven't had a problem. Outside, which I don't use my laptop very much outside because that's what we're going to be using the iPad for, I think that probably there would be a difference in bright light. That's what I would anticipate. But I think for my general work, I can't see me having to turn it up to full brightness very often. In terms of color, in terms of speed, in terms of all those other things, the keyboard responsiveness, oh my gosh, it's lovely. It's absolutely lovely. And I held the Air in one hand and the 14.2-inch M1 MacBook Pro in the other hand, just to feel the weight difference. And this is one of those things, and I talked about this last week, that even though in actual ounces, it's not huge, but the effect of the two different devices is huge. In how one, when it's open especially, you can easily hold it in one hand and walk around, whereas the other, MacBook Pro, not so much. So far, I have to say how this laptop's set up, how it's performing right now, how the screen looks, how my photo apps are running on it, all that stuff, fantastic. And the battery life is really good. In fact, I'll check it right now. I'm at 78% right now, and I've been using it all day. Don't you love that about the M laptops, Apple Silicon? Oh my gosh, they just go and go and go. The reason why I brought that up, other than to provide you with an update about the new Air, for those of you that might be interested, and the trade-in, the enhanced trade-in deal is still going on with Apple as well, is that for some people, a 13-inch MacBook Air would be their mobile photography. And I would say that's legit, you know, given the size, given the weight. There are times when I want to go even lighter than that, and that's when I segue now into the iPad mini, the A17 iPad mini. But I totally get it for those that say, hey, I've got a really portable laptop and that's what I want to use for my mobile photography. I just want you to know that I fully acknowledge that and I get it. I think it's legit. As things continue to unfold with the MacBook Air here, the M4 MacBook Air, I'll keep you posted. But I have to say, in terms of looks, performance, setup, simply lovely. All right, let's switch over now to something that's even smaller. And when I think of mobile photography, for me, I'm usually thinking of running things on my little iPad, my iPad mini. There's a reason for this, and one of them happens to be airplanes. Right? And airplanes, for me, are mostly a hate relationship. I have to say there must be some love in there because they get me where I want to go. But mostly it's hate, to be honest with you. And one of the hates is, and especially when you're a big guy like me, it's difficult to open up a laptop on an airplane when the person in front of you has reclined their seat all the way and there isn't a lot of room to begin with. You don't have anywhere to put your elbows, you know, to type, because when I type, I don't type with my elbows against my body. That's just weird. You know, my elbows are out a little bit. I can't do that. And the laptop, generally speaking, doesn't fit on the tray that comes down very well. They slide around. It's just not fun. That's one of the reasons why, for me, in addition to having a very light laptop, I need an iPad as well. Another time that I work on my images, and you will laugh at me at this, but I work on them in the car because, well, I love my car. I go camping in it. I just had a short camping trip last week in it because I was testing some new gear that I'm going to write about. The weather was inclement at times. It was very nice just to go into the car, turn on the heated seats, and work on some pictures on the iPad and so much easier again than trying to juggle a laptop in that sort of confined space. So there are instances where, for me anyway, the Mini is wonderful. Now, having the Apple Pencil Pro with the latest iPad Mini makes editing so much better. And I just have Apple Pencil Pro turned on for all my editing apps, which I'm going to talk about in a second. So it's nice for moving the sliders, all that. But where it's really nice for me is when I'm doing selections, when I'm creating a mask, or I'm selecting something to be erased, to be AI vanished, all that kind of stuff. The pencil is just lovely. And again, I don't have that on the laptop. I don't have the pencil. Now, I could carry an extra tablet, but then that tablet's probably going to be bulkier than my iPad Mini. Why don't I just use the pencil and my iPad Mini? And of course, I could use my Mini as a tablet, but then we get into all sorts of latency things. Not going down that road. If you like that stuff, that's fantastic. But for me, I just assume just work on the iPad. Now, one of the things that I have added to the iPad, and we were actually talking about this in class the other day, because we have our mobile photography workshop going on right now, is I really like a product called Paperlike. And I know there are competitive products for it too that are also very good. What Paperlike does, it's basically a protectant for the screen on the iPad using these little nano bumps on there. And so it reduces glare, which is really nice. But when you use a pencil on it, it increases the friction just enough to where it feels natural. It feels a little bit like writing on paper. And when you're working with a pencil a lot, having something like Paperlike on it really just kind of finishes it off. Now, I will tell you that Paperlike is not cheap. You get a two-pack, and it's something like $40 for the two-pack. So it's not cheap, but I tell you, it went on the iPad beautifully. I have no bubbles or anything like that. They give you a really good system for applying it, and I just feel like it's going to last forever. So I probably will always have an extra one, which is good to have. It has really made working on the iPad Mini so much more fun. And, you know, it wasn't until the Apple Pencil Pro that I really got hooked on using a pencil, because it's so much better than the first generation pencil I had with my last iPad. So the combination of the newer pencil, the newest pencil, with Paperlike has really made editing fun on an iPad, and sometimes more fun than working on a laptop. So that's kind of the combination that I'm using. I know a lot of people like a bigger iPad, and that's great too. The reason I like the smaller one is all the reasons I've been telling you, kind of related toward the laptop, which is just working in confined spaces. I'm more comfortable on the Mini. I don't have to worry about my elbows. I don't have to worry about having enough room, you know, in terms of when I'm sitting in a seat on some sort of transport. It just works everywhere, and it's really nice for reading books in bed at night before I go to sleep. It's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about the software that I run on this, and this has been a hot topic in our mobile photography workshop right now. My feeling about photography software on the iPad is that there are basically two routes to go. One route is the Adobe route, and the other route is the iCloud route, or the Apple route. Now, the reason why I say that is because if you're doing a lot of work on your iPad, you're going to want to store some of it, if not all of it. And so then at some point, the cloud comes into play. I like iCloud better than Adobe's cloud, their Creative Cloud. Because it's a lot cheaper. I can get 2 terabytes of storage for $10.99 a month, $11 a month. Whereas now, for the updated Adobe Photography plan, it's $19.99 a month, and that includes 1 terabyte of storage. So it's a lot more expensive to go the Adobe route. The other thing is that, for me, the Adobe route is great when I'm working in Lightroom, because all my Lightroom mobile stuff goes into the cloud. And then if I'm using Lightroom on the computer, of course, that's cloud connected. And that's great for that particular task. But I do a lot of other things. You know, I'm writing all the time. I'm doing spreadsheets to run my business. When you work for yourself and you're your own boss, you have a lot of different things to do. You know, the joke is that photography is a small percentage of the time when you're a professional photographer. And that's very true. I just got to see the advantage of iCloud again for me when I set up this new MacBook Air, because essentially I backed up the old MacBook and there were just a few things, the pictures folder, you know, the stuff that isn't automatically going into iCloud. There are just a few things. It actually fit on a thumb drive. And then everything else is part of iCloud, which means then when I opened up the MacBook Air and I logged into iCloud, my whole documents folder, my whole desktop, all my apps and everything are available. You know, everything is there. And it just makes it so much easier. That's the kind of stuff that I like in addition to just managing my photography. So if I'm going to pay for cloud storage, and I'm going to one way or another, I want to have cloud storage that meets all of my needs, not just some of my needs. And that doesn't mean that iCloud is the answer for everyone. Of course, I would never say that. You know me. I'm like, you know, go with what works best for you. But what I am saying is that if you're going to make a decision about cloud storage, even if it's Dropbox or something, you need to look at all the reasons why you need cloud storage, all the ways that you want to use cloud storage, and then find something that works best for you so that you get the most value out of whatever money you're spending, because you're going to spend some money on cloud storage. Now, the thing that I said in class the other day is, you know, $10.99 a month I'm paying for my iCloud account. That basically is one roll of film right now. That's about how much one roll of film costs. And I'm paying that much for cloud storage and for storing, you know, everything that I do in a month. So I don't think it's a bad value at all. I think it's actually a pretty good value. Coming back to that decision you have to make, because I don't think very many people want to pay $10.99 a month to Apple for 2 terabytes and then another $20 a month to Adobe for, you know, their 1 terabyte of storage there. Now that does seem expensive to me. So you kind of figure out where you want to go. So if you're in the Adobe world with Lightroom, Photoshop, and all the Adobe apps, it may make sense for you to go that route. For everyone else on an iPad and working in iOS, I would say that there are a lot of software applications that hook into iCloud in addition to Photos. And I think this is something that a lot of people don't realize. They think, well, if I go iCloud, then I'm totally stuck with just Photos. You're not. And I'm going to give you 2 applications today that plug into iCloud really well. And there are more. But I'm going to give you my 2 favorites, the 2 that I am using on my iPad. And the first one is Photomator. And Photomator was just acquired by Apple, and for good reason. It's fantastic. I think Apple made a very good choice. For now, and for the foreseeable future, Photomator will remain a standalone, and you can get it for like $29.99 a year. You can get a lifetime license for $99 unless it's on sale. You can go by the month. So you have all sorts of different options with it. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't cost very much. Now, I anticipate at some point it will be folded into Photos for iOS. When that happens, most likely it will be free. But for right now, let's just say $29.99 a year. What are some of the things that I like about Photomator and why am I using it? Well, first of all, I have the option to tap into my iCloud account, you know, my camera roll, what Photos uses, to work in Photomator. So in one sense, it's just like working in Photos. You say, hey, I want to tap into my camera roll, and Photomator is like Photos, except that you have a whole bunch more tools and you have all sorts of different things that you can do. But the other thing that's really nice is, and this is especially important if you don't have an internet connection, is that you can work off the Files app. Now, if you're not using the Files app in iOS and you're a photographer, I would say it's time to learn it, because the Files app adds a big dimension to your photography work. And especially now that we have USB-C connectivity, which means you can just stick a card reader into the iPad or the iPhone or whatever. I'm using the OM3 a lot right now because I've really fallen in love with it. So I have the card reader, and I take that card reader, plug it into the iPad, and go to the Files app. And there in the Files app, I can view all the images that are on the card. I can copy some into folders. You manage it just like a desktop, and you can work without any cloud connectivity at all. And that can be important when you're in situations where there might not be internet. It's great to have all your pictures in the cloud, but if you don't have access to the cloud, that's not so great. The thing about Photomator, it allows you to work locally on device using the Files app as kind of the go-between, or you can just tap into your camera roll. And I think that's really cool. As you can imagine, it has all the editing tools that you would expect. So it's got white balance, tone, all that stuff. So everything that you need there. But in addition to all of that, it's got some great tools. And one of them is really nice for those of us that shoot Micro Four Thirds. Now, one of the articles that I was reading leading up to today's podcast, when I was thinking about what am I going to talk about in the news section, was about how OM System is sticking with the smaller sensors, the smaller resolution, 20 megapixels, to allow them to do all the computational photography things that they want to do. So they're realizing that there's a trade-off there, but it's a trade-off that they think differentiates them from other camera makers. And I think that's interesting. And I also think that it's a good trade-off because I want those features. Photomator has a function called super resolution. And so super resolution allows you to use AI, machine learning, to upscale your photos right there on your iPad, and resolution suddenly becomes a non-issue. And as an example, I took a file from OM3. Its basic resolution when I started working on the file was 5,184 by 3,434, pretty much the standard size for the OM3. I used super resolution in Photomator on it, and the result was a file that was 10,368 by 6,966. So basically a 2x multiplier there. And the file looks great. You can zoom in, you can do all that stuff because it's using AI for the upscaling process. And in fact, in some ways, the file looks better after running super resolution than it did at its native resolution. So I just think that is a fantastic feature in Photomaker. It also has a machine learning based tool for denoising that's very strong. It has a tool for debanding the sky, which won't be a problem with your newer images, but if you're going back in time to older images, you might have some banding in the sky, and they actually have a tool to do that. It has HDR support, has excellent healing tools. It's a terrific, terrific application, and it allows you to use the cloud service that you might already have, and it allows you to work on device. So Photomator has earned a place on my iPad, and it's one of the regular apps that I use all the time. Photos for iOS, Photomator, and then a new one now called Nitro for iPhone and iPad. And Nitro is a new app from Gentleman Coders. That name may sound familiar to you because they're the ones that designed RAW Power. And RAW Power is still available. You can still get RAW Power. Now they have a new app that they've updated that has all the goodies that you would expect in an app, and it's called Nitro, N-I-T-R-O. And it has a lot of the features that I talked about in Photomator. Seamless integration with iCloud Photos, You can also work on device using the Files app integration, including XMP sidecars, AI masking, gradients and brushes, clone and spot removal, all the basic adjustments that you would expect, tone, white balance, all of that. Has raw fine-tuning, which those of you that use raw power know how good that is. This is also in here. One thing about Gentleman Coders that they do is that they are updating the raw profiles much faster than Apple. Now, Photomator is hooked into Apple's raw engine. Gentleman Coders is not. And that's one of the reasons why I keep Nitro or raw power, is because I can work on the raw files for my OM3 in Nitro. I can't do it in Photomator or Apple Photos because that raw profile isn't supported yet. That alone is kind of worth the reason to keep this app around. It has batch processing, has great LUTs, has Fujifilm film simulations built in it for no matter which camera you're using, Apple Pencil support, all that stuff. And you can get a license for it, a perpetual license. So you can rent it just like you can with Photomator, or you can buy it a permanent license for $99 forever. And if you're a registered raw power user, you can get a forever license for $79, which I think for this application is just a steal. It's fantastic. So Nitro and Photomator, they complement each other very well. By the way, Gentleman Coders offers a no strings 1 week trial for Nitro. You don't have to give a credit card or anything. And you can really check it out and see how it works with your files. So the tools that I'm using right now for my mobile photography, the iPad mini with the A17 processor, Apple Pencil Pro, the iPhone 15 Pro Max, the OM System OM3 for my mobile digital camera, and then Photomator, Photos for iOS, and Nitro, and I'm having a ball. Just really a great setup. And then, of course, I might be lugging this MacBook Air 13-inch every now and then, too. All right, let's cover a little camera industry news. I got a couple stories I want to run by you. So this is on DP Review, and I have a link in the show notes. It says, new pen, not yet on the drawing board, says OM System. So this is a follow-up to the story that I was doing last week, which is they're very open to the idea of doing a new pen, and they're talking about it very openly, but it's not on the drawing board yet. So a lot of this that's in this article was covered last week. But I want to skip down to the section that says, we're not a company to make an enthusiast compact. Despite this, and in spite of rising sales of compact, Togashi says, we shouldn't expect an enthusiast compact from OM System. Quote, as for the current popularity of compact digital cameras, lower price models seem to be selling very well worldwide. But we feel this is a temporary trend, he says. We are continuing to study the development of a successor to the TG series, but currently we don't have any plans to introduce other compact camera concepts. As for high-end compact digital cameras, we recognize that there is a dedicated user base that remains a valued segment of the market. However, at OM System, we are focused on developing products that align with the evolving needs of the photographer, ensuring we deliver the best possible innovation and performance across our lineup. When we were Olympus, our brand was known for high-end compact cameras like the XZ series and the Stylus One. However, since becoming OM System, we no longer carry high-end compact cameras. Instead, we focus on cameras that align with the broader market needs, including those of younger generation photographers. Given the significant investment required, not only in research and development, but also in reestablishing a high-end compact brand image, such a product would be challenging to make profitable. And I think that's very insightful then. And I've been talking about this in workshops and so forth. I think that what OM System has to do and what they are doing is that they have to limit their product lineup to the things that really are targeted to their core audience and just not get distracted with trends and things like that. It takes a lot of discipline to do that. And it feels like they are disciplined and are doing that. And I think that is going to keep them around for a long time, which is what many of us want a lot. Another one of our favorite brands is going to have a big announcement next week. Fujifilm teases new camera that combines the X100 VI and the GFX 100 S Mark II. This is on Petapixel, links in the show notes. Fujifilm X Summit in Prague is just days away. The event is scheduled to start at 6 a.m. Eastern Time on March 20th and will deliver at least one big surprise, a new camera. When Fujifilm announced the X Summit, it included a short teaser video that provided mostly obscured glimpse at a new camera. Given its size and shape, smart money is on a GFX series camera with a built-in lens. Fujifilm's new teaser today, seen above, puts more fuel on that fire. The 9-second clip shows a hand holding Fujifilm X100 VI and then a second hand holding a Fujifilm GFX 100 S Mark II. Then the next shot shows both side by side being moved back and forth across each other before the video cuts to a black screen showing a new camera, again entirely in the shadows. That is very dramatic, isn't it? I love it. It doesn't require much imagination to follow the teaser's logic. Fujifilm will unveil a camera in Prague next week that combines the features of the X100 VI and the GFX 100 S Mark II. There are not many or any GFX-specific features to transport over to the new X series camera besides the medium format sensor, meaning the new camera must be a GFX model. So we will find out soon enough. This will probably be the topic of next week's show, I'm guessing, because if they do something like this, a fixed lens medium format camera that's has as small as form factors you can have for that size of sensor, that's interesting. That is very interesting. If indeed that's what they announce, we will be talking about it next week. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. A big shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our podcast, our community, month in and month out. They've also created a wonderful community online where they hang out, where they share pictures, they share new discoveries, they tell stories. It's really great. And of course, they get discounts for all of our workshops, whether they're online or in person. If you want to become an Inner Circle member and see what this is all about, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit, see what you think, and then hopefully you will sign up and be receiving an email from me with access to all the Inner Circle perks. And a huge thanks to our members for supporting this podcast. I'd also like to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that not only produce beautiful, beautiful printing paper in a variety of sizes and surfaces. There's a saying, there's a hardware store here in Santa Rosa, and their saying is, if we don't have it, you don't need it. I love that saying. If we don't have it, you don't need it. That is Red River Paper, right? In the printing world. If they don't have it, you don't need it. They have just about anything that you could imagine in terms of surfaces and size. And they're helpful. They have a lot of online support. They answer their email. And the prices are excellent. If you want to get your inkjet printing going, which I highly recommend, it just takes your photography to a new place, then click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit. Make sure you get the coupon code for free shipping from the Digital Story. Get yourself some paper start making some prints, and start creating some beautiful artwork. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Very excited about what we may be talking about next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.